You probably can't buy matching pajamas for everyone on your street on Black Friday, or the latest tech toys for the neighborhood on Cyber Monday. But this Giving Tuesday, you can give the gift of public radio to your entire community when you become an NHPR sustainer at just $13 a month. And instead of a thank you gift, you can pay it forward and choose to give 13 meals to the New Hampshire Food Bank to help local families in need. Make your year-end tax-deductible gift at nhpr.org.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Canoy, and this is The Exchange. Friendships in our culture are often overlooked or seen as not as important as romantic or family relationships. But friendships play a crucial role in our physical and mental health, and this year, they've been evolving. Some Americans find themselves rekindling relationships with old friends, forging connections with new ones, or having to sever ties with others due to disagreements over COVID, or because they're just too burnt out to make the effort. Exchange listeners, how have your friendships changed this year? Let us know with an email. It's exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or call 1-800-892-6477. We have three guests for the hour. They are Lissa Bain Kim, licensed clinical social worker in Durham, also Janice McCabe, a sociology professor at Dartmouth and author of Connecting in College, How Friendship Networks Matter for Academic and Social Success. Also Lydia Denworth, science journalist, contributing editor at Scientific American, and author of Friendship, The Evolution, Biology, and Extraordinary Power of Life's Fundamental Bond. Well, a big welcome to all of you. And Lydia, I want to start with you, picking up on the title of your book. What is that power of friendship?
Oh, it's everything, friendship. It's so critical. And we often think of it, we've thought of it as pleasurable for thousands of years, but what we haven't understood is that it ties right down to our biology and how long we live, and that it's part of our evolutionary story, and that a friendship can be as important a relationship as a biological relative or a romantic partner.
Wow, you're going to have to tell me a little bit more about that, Lydia, that it makes us live longer having friends.
It makes us live longer. So the power comes from its ability to, so yes, on the good side, friendship makes us live longer, it makes us healthier, it makes us happier. And you know, there's a whole lot of evidence and science to back that up. That's not just me sort of saying that in a catchy way on a radio show. It affects how your heart functions, your stress responses, your sleep, your risk of dementia and depression, and even how fast your cells age. And so it's got huge biological power as well as the psychological power that we know. And one of the really important things is that what friendship is for is we get a lot of pleasure from it. We get rewards in our brains from being with our friends and enjoying, or not being with them physically now, maybe.
Yeah, which we'll talk about.
You know,
go ahead.
Which we'll talk about. But you know, let's before times, let's imagine the you know, all the pleasures that we get from friendship, the traditional pleasures. And all of that is terrific. But what it's really about is about having us keep coming back for more so that we build up those relationships. They build over time, and then our friends are there when we need them. And that really is one of the critical things that gets us through a crisis. You know, back in the prehistoric times, it was about, you know, protecting us from lions coming across the plains, and now the lions come in a different form. But friendship actually has the power to get us through.
Wow. Well, Lissa, for young people especially, you're working in Durham. Why is friendship so important, Lissa?
I think for a lot of the students that I work with, especially the students, they're moving away from home. And so they're in a new environment, and they are, you know, developing those friendships support groups that are going to carry them through their years in college away from home. So that helps them to, you know, acclimate to the stresses and to handle the stresses at school, and to they build a whole new support system that's important to them.
Yeah, and again, we'll talk in a moment about how those opportunities to make those really great college friends have been altered or interrupted by the pandemic, but what's going on, especially with young adults, Lissa? I've done a lot of reading about the young adult brain and how, you know, the sort of where the brain is at that point in their lives and where their hormonal development and their adult development is at that point in their lives. These friendships are really intense and really, really, really important.
They are. They're very much so. And when my clients come in, they, you know, I work with both couples and individuals, and especially for my college students, though, they're coming in and they're talking about their relationship concerns with their friends, because those are the central relationships for them. And you know, at this stage in their life, they're branching out and they're becoming more independent from families. And those are the friendships that I think we all, even as those of us in our later years, look back on as kind of central to our sense of identity and to our sense of self. And we go back to those friendships again and again. And I think even during times of stress like this, I'm finding a lot of clients will go back to those friendships in college, because those are the ones that feel the deepest and the most connected. And so I think those college years are so essential to how we learn about friendships and how we learn to build those friendships and develop those connections with others.
Yeah. Well, I myself had a 2-hour conversation on the phone right on Saturday with my college roommate, and you know, it was just
absolutely,
it was fantastic. Janice, what makes a friendship meaningful?
Yeah, that's a good question, because it's something that is hard for people themselves to explain. A lot of my research is based on interviews. So instead, I would ask people questions about kind of their daily experiences, and I could really see that kind of power and meaning in especially the support that everyone's been talking about so far, and that sense of belonging that our friends can give us. And sometimes that meaning comes from one-on-one relationships. I think we often think about our best friend, like you mentioned, your friend from college, you know, that one-on-one relationship. But in my research, I do network analysis also. So I'm interested in the connections between people's friends, or sometimes the lack of connection. And so that meaning can come from, you know, having a dense group of people that in normal times would literally surround you. Like we think about, yeah, Friends, for example, the TV show, and or, you know, maybe having these multiple groups, people that you can go to for different things. So sometimes the meaning comes from there. You have a group or a group of people that you'll talk to about a certain topic, another that you'll do something with in a particular way. So we get that meaning in a lot of different ways.
So Lissa, how does our society broadly portray the importance of friendships? And I'm really struck by what Lydia told us about these relationships are critical for our health and our long-term well-being. But how does society in general, Lissa, show us how important they are versus romantic relationships or family ties?
It's an excellent question. I think, you know, they're so different in the sense that we choose our friends, right? And our family ties are our family ties. And so we turn to friends and we find common values and common, you know, activities and interests, and they become very important again in our ability to manage the kind of changes and shifts in our life. And I think especially now during, as we've talked about with COVID, you know, this is a time of sort of a collective trauma. And during those times when we're feeling uncertain, we turn towards those that understand us and who support us. And that tends to be, I'm finding with my clients, a lot of them, it tends to be friends who have known them for a while, like you said about talking with your college friend, people who have known us and really kind of see all of us. And when we are in that kind of state of arousal, when we're uncertain, like in this time of pandemic, we need those friendships in order to kind of keep us more grounded, and they actually help soothe us.
Yeah. Lydia, what do you think? The friends versus family emphasis that we see in our society, you know, pop culture, music, movies, you know, whatever.
I think the science of friendship does two interesting things. On some levels, it clarifies what friendship actually is. The word has become kind of devalued currency with social media and all of that. But the truth is, we still know what a good friend is. And there are kind of three critical characteristics. It's a long-lasting, stable relationship. It's positive, so it makes us feel good. And it's cooperative, and it has, you know, reciprocal back and forth. We help each other. We help our friends. And there's a lot of other things friendship can have, but the sort of consensus across fields is that it's got to have those elements. And then, so it's clarified that, and it's really about the quality of the relationship. But then the second thing that it's done, to get to your question, is that it, I feel it has blurred the lines in some ways, because we can be good friends with anyone, with a relative, with a spouse, or with a friend in the traditional sense. And we cannot. We can be connected to, you know, biological family who stress us out. We've just had Thanksgiving. Maybe there were some people who weren't so sorry that they didn't have to travel to be with their family. And, you know, and it's so I have come to think of friendship as a template for all other relationships, because it's, if you really focus on the quality, which is where you get the biological bang for your buck and the help in your health. I mean, friendship is as important as diet and exercise for our health, as I listed all of the reasons before. That's a different way of thinking about it. It kind of flips the script a little bit, instead of, which isn't to say that romantic relationships and family relationships are not critical and don't have some things about them that are different. But I think it's kind of interesting to look at where the lines are blurred now.
I want to remind our listeners that you can join us as we talk about how friendship has changed during the pandemic, sometimes for better, sometimes for worse, definitely evolving and different than last year. Join us with your questions and comments and your stories. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Tell us how your friendships have changed in this unusual year. You can give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. You can always use Facebook or Twitter as well. And all of you, Janice, you first, how have your own friendships evolved and changed during the pandemic?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I've seen, it's funny, over the weekend, I also connected for about an hour and a half with a good friend of mine from graduate school. And so I've found that there are certain relationships that are closer for me just because distance was the barrier before. But now that distance, whether, you know, they live 10 minutes away or 20 hours, it doesn't make that big of a difference for, you know, talking on the phone or on Zoom. But what I find I really miss are more of those day-to-day connections with people that are less close, but I still valued. And I hope that's something good that will come out in general out of the pandemic and our experiences, is this kind of reflection on how we do value these relationships and how important they are for us.
Oh, that's interesting. So you first said something that I've read a lot, that a lot of people say, since I can't really get together with anybody physically around the corner or around the country, you know, I'm going to spend 2 hours, you know, talking to that friend across the country. But talk about the second thing that you mentioned, Janice, people who aren't necessarily your good friends, you wouldn't call them up and have them over, but you see them every day at the gym or once a week at church or, you know, in that, you know, that civic group that you used to go to. I mean, talk about those sort of relationships that are kind of casual friends and how important they are.
Yeah, I mean, that's often when, from my research, people often ask me for advice on how to make friends or how to make meaningful relationships, especially outside of the college setting where it can be a little bit easier. And usually I just say to, you know, do things you enjoy anyway and start up a conversation with someone when you see them there. And that advice is really hard right now, because unless people are walking a dog, you know, they may encounter someone, but it's not like you just start up a conversation in the same kind of way. But I mean, I found myself missing conversations with a coworker who talked to me every morning about weather. and it was kind of one of those things where you know, I didn't really give it that much thought before, but there was some kind of point of connection that feels like a bit of a loss, you know, in there. And it feels funny to say, you know, to lose that chit chat about the weather. But we're social beings. And I think, you know, for most of us living alone or living just with our nuclear family, we miss that group connection.
Right. Lissa, how about you? How have your own friendships changed in the past 8 or 9 months?
Well, I really love this part of the conversation, because I really, one of the things I have noticed is that kind of broader community connection that we're missing out on. I think that we all miss those casual conversations on the street or on the side of your, you know, kid's soccer game that kind of just fill up your day with nice connections that you often take for granted when you can do them. But I agree with Janice, and I hope that that's something people sort of take with them, is how important those are. But I would say, you know, for myself and for many that I've talked to, there's a sort of a tightening of friendship circle, right? That we kind of reach out to the maybe fewer people who we really feel comfortable with, and trust, and it's sort of an easy connection. And I think that I've heard that from a lot of people.
So a smaller circle, a richer circle, if we could put it that way, Lissa?
Yeah, I would say a richer circle, smaller and richer. Yeah.
Lydia, what's your experience been?
All of those things, all of the above. I definitely am seeing, I'm close, you know, I still see my handful of closest friends. And then, but I think there's sort of two sides to this. It's because, as you all said, in person, I've only seen maybe 3 or 4 friends in this entire year since March. But I have seen a lot. I have 2 sets of Zoom friends, or 3 actually. But one is my college friends, as you mentioned, and we only used to see each other, you know, at reunions and periodically when people came through New York where I am. And we had a WhatsApp thread for years, but it was kind of dormant. And then the pandemic really brought us all back together, and we're around the world, not just around the country. So in some senses, I feel more connected to those women this year than I have in a long time. And the same is true for a sort of larger group of my neighborhood friends, who some of whom I've seen in person, but most of whom I haven't. And but it, in general, what I'm seeing and hearing is exactly what Lissa just said, that there has been a tightening of our circles. It's exceedingly hard to make a new friend now, mm-hmm. as Janice said. And I really feel for people who had just moved, or I have a 22-year-old son who's about to start a new job, but remotely, he won't have any of that natural kind of coming into the office and meeting people, getting to know people, which is, I think, especially important when you're at that phase of life. And so there is a loss, and there's a kind of a richness that I think one of the things, I'm sure Janice is familiar with this, all this research, but what those more casual ties give us is a kind of new information, a kind of a lifeblood. They keep us from getting stale, and, you know, there's a richness to our close friends, but there's also a sort of energy and kind of freshness to connecting to other people periodically that we're not getting. And I hope we will. But overall, I feel that what the pandemic has done is reminded everyone of how important both the close ties and the weaker ties really are. I mean, you don't know what you have till it's gone, you know? And my book came out in January, and I thought my job was to convince everyone of how important friendship was. And then
people don't need convincing anymore.
No, we all have figured that out.
Right. You're listening to The Exchange on NHPR. So, Lissa, what kinds of stresses have friendships been under? We've all talked about how, you know, some of our connections have gotten closer than ever because we have time to sit on a call for 2 hours. But what kind of stresses and strains, Lissa, are you hearing about that friendships have been under?
Well, I think I hear a lot about people feeling surprised, sometimes taken aback, by having differences with friends that they thought they were shared values with. And what I mean by that is, you know, there can be a jarring disconnect between friends when they when they see a situation slightly differently and prioritize different values, meaning, you know, if you have one person who is thinking about personal safety because if they have, you know, a physical health issue and they're looking for simplicity, and while someone else is, you know, prioritizing academic growth or personal freedom, that they suddenly find themselves kind of at odds with how to balance what seem like opposing values. I wouldn't say they're actually opposing. I think we just prioritize values, you know, things we prioritize differently. But that conflict can come up when we feel like the other person doesn't understand, you know, what our needs are. And that has led to some confusion, I think, in some relationships and tensions.
Wow. So, Lissa, one person says, no, I'm not comfortable you coming in my house.
Right.
We can go for a walk outside. And the other person says, well, I don't want to walk outside. It's cold today and, you know, it should be fine. So you're hearing about conflicts over the safety of the pandemic.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think about some college students I work with, and especially a couple of freshmen, say, who have come in and have met, you know, they had this limited amount of time, right, to form this social circle. It was interesting talking to them and finding out, you know, for them, they felt like, well, I had this 1 or 2 week period to make this quick net of friends that are going to carry me through, because I can't afterwards just walk around and meet people. And the way that these students have kind of found connection, a lot of them, is around safety, agreeing on risk tolerance and safety during the pandemic. You know, which of these, how do I match up with this other person as far as, do they wear a mask or not? Do they go to parties or not? Do they break rules? Do they, you know, and having that shared perspective on how to manage anxiety around the pandemic.
Wow. Janice, what do you think? How does that compare with the research you've done on college students and young adults?
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about the idea of the shared perspective and how we gain a lot, or the kind of identity work, the reflections on ourselves that we do through our friends. So as we talk about our friends and think about our friends, we're thinking about ourselves and vice versa. So there's a process of, you know, seeing ourselves kind of like a mirror with friends. So here you can get into some discussions about like morality, for example, too. I was thinking there, and that's something that's come up in some earlier interviews that I did, not about the pandemic specifically.
Right.
And then there's also this idea of kind of distancing, that, you know, I am not like this person. And that was something I saw previously, with college students a lot around kind of partying or other things. And
when Lissa was talking, I was thinking about that. Even though we haven't had a pandemic before, these issues around risk and how we operate and the choices we make definitely comes up for students and young people around partying and what's acceptable and what isn't. We have to take a very short break. When we come back, more on friendship in the pandemic, and we'll start hearing from listeners too. So stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, we're asking how the pandemic has affected our friendships. This year, many of us find these important relationships altered, sometimes improved, sometimes not. Listeners, how have your friendships changed this year? 8 months into the pandemic, are you making more efforts to connect with friends, or do you find yourself pulling back? Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or call 800-892-6477. Again, that's 800-892-6477. We're talking with Lissa Bain Kim, a social worker in Durham, also Janice McCabe, a sociology professor at Dartmouth, and Lydia Denworth, a science journalist and author of a book about the evolution of friendship. And Lydia, this first one's for you. How much more effort or less effort does friendship take right now? I mean, in the before times, you had to maybe leave the house and go downtown to meet your friend. But now you have to kind of call and see when is good and see what kind of connection he or she has and so forth. So what do you think, Lydia, about the effort that people have to put into their friendships these days?
I think
Mostly it's more for that, you know, mainly because we have to do it in different ways. I mean, some of us were picking up the phone plenty, but a lot of people were getting away from that. It's interesting. There was a statistic I saw earlier this year. So normally Mother's Day is the highest volume of calls in the year. And this year we're kind of, it's Groundhog Day or Mother's Day all over again every day. we're picking up the phone so much more, obviously. And that's great. But the point is that it wasn't what we were necessarily all used to. And Zoom is certainly not something that we were all used to. And so anything that's different, you know, requires us to get our heads around it or to you. And because you're not meeting people, you're not bumping into people naturally, you have to build that into your day and into your schedule. And so that from that perspective, it is harder. And energy is an important, from an evolutionary point of view, energy is an important question when it comes to friendship, because in fact, we put energy into our relationships and the benefits need to outweigh the costs. I mean, that can sound like a very sort of, I don't know, a little bit of a harsh way to look at it, but scientists do think that there's truth to that. And so you need to feel that you got something, you know, from it. And that was true before, and that is still true. And it's just that the kind of energy is different now.
Yeah, I've heard, Lydia, you know, people talking about they want to connect with friends, but sometimes they're emotionally exhausted at the end of the day. You know, they're dealing with the pandemic, they're dealing with all the workarounds with that, whether it's quarantine, whether it's being sick, if they've got kids at home doing school, you know, oh my gosh. What about that, Lydia? People saying they just, it's just too much. You know, they want to connect, but they just need to, you know, I don't know, stare at Netflix or read a book or go for a walk.
Well, I think I so get it. And I think that that is fair and fine and that you still need to find some ways to connect with your friends. Maybe it's just a regular text chain where you send jokes to each other and make each other smile. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be time consuming. Or I like Marco Polo. I don't know if people use that app, but it's little videos that are not, you're not, you know, you can drop it in the way you would send a text, but it's a video. So then you can see someone's face, but you can do it when it's convenient to you and you can still feel connected. I think people have to find what works for them and they have to understand their limitations, but I caution that it's the same thing that happened in the before times, where often our friends were the thing that we let slide. You know, we were so busy with work or with family obligations, and we would say, oh, I'm so sorry, but you know, I wish I could see you, but I can't, or I'm too tired. And almost always when we did get up off the couch and go meet our friend when we could do that, we were glad we did. And so I would say that the same thing is probably true now. If you actually, if the hardest part is the first step, and if you pick up the phone, you will probably be glad you did.
Well, Dawn wrote us to talk about how she's staying connected with friends. Dawn says, when I sold my business 3 years ago, I found myself missing the relationships I had with coworkers and clients. I started a little group of women in our Newfound Lake community that meet once a week to walk, chat, and stop for coffee, when that was a safe thing to do. The area is a retirement community, and I found that many people found themselves missing connections that they may have had before they relocated to a new community. So Dawn says, our group, the Juliettes, which stands for Just Us Ladies in Our Extra Time, has turned into a wonderful support network, especially at a time of need because of illness, loss, or emotional support. Facebook and email provide a connection to keep our group up to date on where we will meet each week and as a clearinghouse to encourage ladies to connect outside our usual walks too. Lately, Dawn says, we've been donning our masks, supporting and providing a little normalcy in strange times we're all living through while getting a little exercise at the same time. Dawn, I'm going to think of you the next time I go walking with my neighborhood friends with our masks on, and we'll have to come up with a cool acronym. Thank you for writing. I want to remind listeners that you can join us. Tell us how your friendships have changed. Have they gotten easier? Has it gotten more difficult? Have you reconnected with some friends and had to disconnect with others? Let us know. Send us an email. exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Or you can give us a call at 1-800 892-6477. Lissa, what are you observing around the time and energy friendship requires in a pandemic?
Well, I agree that I think that there needs to be, people are finding they need to put more intention into reaching out and choosing, I think, who they spend, you know, that time with. And I think it does take more energy. I mean, one of the things that I find as a therapist, I'm providing telehealth. And I bring that up because all of my appointments then are sitting here at my computer. And I can see and feel, you know, the experiential sense of how hard it is to connect and with another person through a screen when you feel like you don't have that in-person mirroring of emotions. And so it takes, it feel like it, you expend more energy when you're looking at someone and talking with someone across the screen. And so I think it's harder on our nervous system. And that can be draining. And so I think it takes a little bit more energy to then try to do that again and to keep doing that, right? So I think that it can be both a something that helps us feel soothed and supported, but it also can be somewhat draining in how it zaps our energy.
That's interesting. So it's harder on our nervous system, Lissa, to be connecting with people again and again and again on Zoom and other video platforms, even though it's wonderful and it's great that we have it.
Right. I mean, I think it's just our nervous systems can kind of connect with each other when we're face to face and can just kind of have that exchange of energy, sort of what Lydia was talking about. And we don't have quite that same level of exchange when we're on a screen.
What do you think, Janice, about the time and energy friendship takes and having to be intentional about it? Do people just say, forget it, I'm too burnt out, I've been dealing with my at-home work and my kids at home school all day? Or are people saying, I need this more than ever?
I think that's a good question. I mean, from my research, I can't answer that directly, but I can say that I had mentioned before the network analysis that's part of my research. And
right.
And one of the groups I call compartmentalizers, and there's people who have usually 2 to 4 friendship groups. So they have these, you know, multiple tight-knit clusters. And one challenge for those people, even pre-pandemic, were the time and identity pressures for managing these multiple friendship groups. And they were able to get benefits from each of these groups, often different things. But I was thinking about the woman who wrote in about her walking group, and that's a great example. Yeah, that's right. Of a time when you can get together with multiple people, you know, without having to balance, because other people, what I call the samplers, have as many friends, but they're mostly one-on-one relationships. And so to be able to reach out to that many people one-on-one, especially now, you'd have to be really great at technology too, I think.
You talked about, you've touched on this a couple times, Janice, so I want to ask you more directly, the different types of friendship networks, samplers, I think you said. So what are those different types of friendship networks and which are doing better in the pandemic?
So I can tell you about the different types and I can speculate a little bit on how they're doing, but I call them samplers, compartmentalizers, and tight knitters. So I'm a visual person. I'll use some descriptions so people can envision them across the radio. But samplers look like a daisy, where the person I interviewed is in the middle of that daisy because they're connected to each of their friends or kind of like a flower petal. And I call them samplers because they typically pick up a friend or two in different places that they go. Different clubs or different jobs or yoga class kind of thing. And then compartmentalizers were what I was just speaking about, where people have 2 to 4 friendship clusters, but there's few connections between the clusters. So for college students, often they're friends from home, friends from campus, or friends from my dorm, friends from my sorority, kind of thing. And then the third group are what I call tight knitters. And visually, they look like a ball of yarn, which reminds me, I forgot to say for the compartmentalizers, if you have two groups, it looks kind of like a bow tie, too, or a kind of fancy bow if you have three or four groups. But the tight knitters, this ball of yarn, students get, and people in general get, higher levels of social support from that group. But it can be hard, back to something Lydia was saying earlier about kind of our casual ties can bring in new information and help keep things from getting stale. So the tight knit networks can be really intense and people can get a lot out of them, especially while they're going well. But they're not always great at letting new information in. And they can pose a challenge if you feel like you don't belong then and need out.
Any ideas, Janice, around which type of friendships or friendship groups might be more resilient to a pandemic?
Yeah, I do think that samplers, networks, I can definitely see them shrinking because it's hard to manage all those kind of one-on-one relationships, all those flower petals. And I think just for the sake of time and energy, samplers especially will need to be selective about where they put their energy. And that may be the case as well for compartmentalizers, especially those that have more than two groups. I think in general, you could find creative ways to get together with a group of people, whether it's one of your clusters for a compartmentalizer or tight knitters, if you're physically together, having that regular walking group, again, where you don't have to put a lot of energy in it because you know that it's going to happen at a specific time. You know, or using technology, text chains, or other things to get people together.
Yeah, and again, the weather we had in New Hampshire, at least this summer and fall, made it conducive to getting together and walking around outside. That's changing, so that'll put our friendships in a new mode, so to speak. You're listening to The Exchange on NHPR. So, Lissa, what about taking a friendship break if everything just seems too overwhelming? You know, some people have lost hours or lost jobs during the pandemic, but others are working harder than ever. So is it okay to take a friendship break, Lissa?
Oh, I think anything's okay. And if there is a break, can not be the end of a relationship, right? It can be a way to you know, ground yourself and then come back. I think the repair afterwards is what's important. Yeah. You know, if both friends are, you know, sort of agreeing that, okay, you know, maybe we need to take a step back and kind of focus on our own, you know, families or whatever the other focus is, that we have, you know, an idea of, well, you know, when things get better, and they will, you know, we will be able to reconnect and we will be able to kind of repair and rebuild our relationship.
Do you think, Lissa, people are, I don't want to say comfortable because it's an uncomfortable conversation, but at least equipped enough to say to a friend, I care about you, but I just don't have time for our friendship right now? I mean, that's a really hard message to deliver.
Well, I think that if it's a friendship that, you know, we've talked about sort of different circles of friends. And I think that if you have friends who have known you for a long time, right, and reaching out to those college friends or friends that even in your own community that you know fairly well and those bonds are close, then people can have those conversations. I think, you know, it's harder with someone who's a more casual acquaintance, but then you're probably not needing to take a break from them anyhow. So I do think if your friendship is, you know, has that that strength of time together and that trust, then yeah, you can have those conversations.
You know, Lydia, I'd like your perspective on this, knowing that you're not, you know, seeing clients like Lissa is, but from your perspective as a science journalist, like repairing friendships or putting friendships on hold when life is just throwing too much at you.
Well, I come down pretty firmly on the idea that it is absolutely okay to shed the relationships, the friendships that are not so healthy. And maybe this is a silver lining of the pandemic, that some people are doing some of that. Because I come back to what I said at the beginning, that the quality of, if you have to pick, so quantity matters, but not as much as quality. And really what we all need is just a handful of relationships that are good for us and that make us feel good. And I think that the pandemic has opened some eyes. It also didn't help that it coincided with such a polarized political year. And so there are some relationships that might not survive that. And I'm okay with that. I think you have to, you have a couple of choices. One is that you that becomes the end of the friendship, which can be ugly, although less ugly in the time of a pandemic sometimes. Or you work to repair it. You do the work that you might not think you would put into a friendship that you might put into a family relationship, where you have those hard conversations about what it is that's not going so well. Or three, you can shuffle people to a different part of your social life. You know, they don't have to be in your inner circle. I just want everybody to keep their focus on making sure that there are some quality bonds where people make you feel good, and be mindful of being that good friend to your friends. You know, when was the last time you told someone how much you appreciated them? Or when you tried to make sure you were being helpful when somebody was helping you. I think sometimes we're very busy sort of criticizing other people's, you know, actions and not taking a hard look at our own.
So it's okay to shed friendships, Lydia, and maybe the pandemic has made us realize which ones are the most important in our lives and which ones are not. And it's a silver lining.
There's an element of that. I mean, to get back to something Lissa said earlier, I have come to think of this as we have had to navigate friendship the way you navigate consent in a sexual relationship today.
Because it has to be so intentional. We have to set it up.
It has to be so intentional. And you learn something about other people in that. Some of that is fine and we can recover from it. And some of it, we won't. But, you know, look for the people that really sustain you.
Well, more on the evolution of friendship in a pandemic in a moment. And I want to ask all of you about the differences between male and female friendships, because I've been reading about how some men especially are struggling with friendship at this time. All that's coming up. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, the nature of friendship this year. Listeners, tell us how the pandemic has affected your friendships, for better and for worse. Let's hear from you. Again, our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or call 800-892-6477. We're talking with Durham-based social worker Lissa Bain Kim, also Dartmouth sociology professor Janice McCabe, and science journalist Lydia Denworth. And all of you, a listener left us a message yesterday about how their friendships have changed during the pandemic. Let's hear.
I think that the effect of 2020 on friendships might best be explained by a sort of binomial equation of sorts. There are two variables, one of which is the pandemic, and the other is the polarization resulting from this political climate. The details of that equation might vary from person to person, such as how strong each of those variables plays a role. But it's something to think about. Thank you.
Okay, and that person did not give a name, but thank you for calling in. And listeners can always leave us audio messages by downloading the NHPR app on their phone and by pressing the Talk to Us button. So if you can't join us live during the show, you can do what that person did and download the NHPR app on your phone, press the Talk to Us button. You can also call us live right now, of course, 800-892-6477, 800-892-6477, or send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Listen to you first, but I want to hear from everybody on this. What differences, Lissa, are you seeing, observing, between the way men and women are approaching friendship now?
That's an interesting, you know, I think that we have seen how differently, and this is a huge, you know, perhaps a generalization, but I think it does bear out in general, you know, that men tend to turn towards work and don't tend to, you know, they throw themselves into work and don't tend to reach out as much to friends or family members for support. They tend to kind of do it on their own. And so I have been seeing more depression among male clients in particular, as they kind of don't know how to navigate reaching out to others or don't know how to find the support they need because they're just not used to doing it as much. So I think that women in general are, you know, more likely to reach out to those friends and make those connections.
So it's harder for them, Lissa, during the pandemic, perhaps to just reach out and say, let's chat for an hour.
Right. I mean, how often, you know, do we, I don't see as often, you know, my male friends or clients reaching out by phone, say to a friend to catch up. I mean, it certainly, of course, happens, but I don't think it happens as often as women. And I see women doing things like creating the group like the Juliets, you know, or creating a Facebook space where people share. This is something I've done, for example, in my community. I, you know, created a Facebook page just about connecting within the community and how to support each other. And that's not something I've seen men necessarily start. And I think that that's a wonderful way to be able to kind of reach out and share ideas and support in a very, you know, kind of light way, but that could be very connecting. And I don't as often see men creating those community outreach.
Yeah, a really interesting article that I came across in the Washington Post just this week, and it references an analysis published in the American Sociological Review. So, Janice, I'm going to throw this to you first. As a sociology professor, finds that young white educated men have lost more friends than other groups. This is over the past decade. The article goes on to say male friendships are often rooted in shoulder to shoulder interactions, such as watching a football game or playing video games. This one sociologist surveyed hundreds of men about how they most often socialize with friends. 80% said sports. And so because of this, the article concludes, many men have had a harder time than women figuring out how to adapt their friendships in a pandemic that is keeping them apart. The article actually went on to show that, you know, some men have been reaching out to each other and saying, look, I just need to talk. Can we go for a walk? Can we talk on the phone? But what do you think, Janice, about the way that men and women are processing their friendships differently this time?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't find in my research with college students as many gender differences as I expected, particularly in terms of kind of thinking about, yeah, the structure of friends and the composition. There were definitely some differences in what people did together, too. And I think that it reminds me too of the work on research on workplace or division of labor in the home too, and that kind of emotional labor that women take on within the home. And it seems like these are lots of examples of women taking on more of what sociologists would call that emotional labor in friendships too. So maybe once something gets started, pool for, I don't know, playing video games, or you can tell I don't do that. my language is not working very well, but for things that you could do, you know, remotely to resemble the kinds of things that people were doing, that men were doing more often in person before.
Lydia, what have you noticed between or about the way different age groups are approaching friendship at this time? You know, younger people, middle-aged people, older people, what age differences do you see?
That's a really interesting question, because one of the things that struck me right at the beginning of all of this was that I thought that the pandemic kind of gave the lie to the way older people tended to think that kids and teenagers, you know, don't even know how to socialize in person. They're always on their phones, you know, and those kids were so desperately missing their in-person time.
Right.
It doesn't mean that they weren't more adept at interacting through technology than some adults were, but they counted on the time they spent. I think that a lot of it is that adults didn't see the time they were together in person in school. You know, we only, like, if your kids came home and then they were on their video games or their phone, that's what you saw. So I think, though, it is true that for them, that the technology for younger people, the technology and the loss of school is just, it's devastating for so many reasons, and the social and emotional learning that young people need to do. And especially people, the youngest kids are okay if because they need that sense of safety and security with their parents in some way. So they're okay socially. Academically, it's harder because anyway, I'm getting off. There's so much to talk about.
Yeah.
I do worry a lot about the young people just coming out of college and things like that, where they're really supposed to be independent and breaking away, and they can't, you know, and they can't go do their new jobs. I think that the people, the older adults, middle-aged adults with families, I mean, they're pressed by the time constraints you were talking about earlier, especially if you're managing a family and job, you know, now you have to do your job and homeschooling and all of those things. It's just about impossible, which is why millions are quitting, especially women. And it strikes me actually that the effect, what you were talking about with male-female friendship, men's style of friendship, which is mostly culturally dictated rather than biologically, there's no reason why they can't have deep, long conversations. They just have not been sort of trained to do it that way. And women, it's just been easier because that's how women tend to interact more. And so it works better in the pandemic. Same problem for women who are trying to work and raise kids. The women, it's falling on the women more than the men. And those people are, I think, more stretched just time-wise to interact with their friends. But when they do, it's not so different from what it used to be. And older adults, of course, are also really struggling in that they are most at risk. And so I know of, you know, the parents of friends who haven't seen anyone in 8 months or whatever it is, you know, in person. And that's a very, very difficult thing. On the other hand, older people are often more resilient and have been through a lot. You know, someone who's 80 or 90 now has been through a couple of wars, and I mean that really sincerely. Like, you know, this is a bit like going through a world war, or, you know, we've been an entire year where our lives have been turned upside down. And I think it can be easier when you're older to see that you'll come out the other side.
Interesting. So some older adults, let's just remember, can't do FaceTime or Zoom or whatever. They don't have the technology, and you can't go in and help them with the technology. So they can't connect that way. But you seem to be saying, Lydia, that they have some resilience factors just by having lived for so long.
Right. And you're absolutely right that the technology, I should have said that. I mean, the technology can be really difficult for older people. So that is right. And I don't know about you. I'm sure you've heard the stories. I have a lot of friends who've tried to orchestrate the regular family Zooms with their parents, or, you know, you get somebody's elbow most of the time, or whatever it is.
Oh,
or
at this point, I would take an elbow. I mean, because you just
no, you can't help them. But yes, my larger point was something that I did a whole feature for Scientific American about resilience and mental health in the pandemic, and it was one of the things people said. It's not that older adults are not stressed in this time, but they handle their stress a little better, and they have lived through more things. And when you've lived through more things, it's also from a friendship point of view, a little bit true that, you know, 1 year in your life, if you're 40 or 60 or 80, is a lot less of your time than if you're 15 or 20 or 25. You know, I have a senior in high school this year. This is, you know, it's a terrible year to be a senior in high school, right?
It's devastating for teenagers.
He's never going to get that back. And but he does see some of his friends. I mean, he has a little bubble of friends that we allow them to socialize. He has a girlfriend. We allow them to see each other because I really feel for him. You know, his senior year is senior year. It's a rite of passage, and you don't get that back. So I think there are these pockets of age groups where it's particularly hard just based on where you were in your life. And then also, obviously, your facility with technology matters a lot.
You're listening to The Exchange on NHPR. So, Lissa, how do you think friendships will change when COVID ends? Are we going to keep some of these new habits, or are we going to say forget it?
That's a good question. I think, you know, what we were talking about before about appreciating, I think appreciation of friendships is is on the rise. You know, I think we all, not only those closer relationships, but those casual relationships. And I think that I hope we'll go back to, or carry that with us rather into the, you know, into the post-pandemic time of saying, okay, yeah, I can't wait to be with my friend or have those casual encounters, at a coffee shop or, you know, and those are so important to me, and I get so much from them, and I think that people will, that appreciation will be carried forward.
Well, all of you, I'm going to close out with a poem that Martha in Lebanon just sent us. So this is great, Martha. Thank you so much. It's called Friends. I see you in the distance, strolling down the sidewalk, yellow puffy vest and green baseball cap atop. Familiar soft brown hat above my smiling face, with walking stick in hand, I quicken a steady pace. You quickly close the gap. 6 feet away, we stop. Examine what we see of faces above the mask. Eyes are smiling, twinkling. Hugs are felt, warm and snug, virtual only. Martha, couldn't have closed out the show better than that. Thank you so much for sending it in. And Lissa, Janice, Lydia, thank you also very much for being with us today. That was Lissa Bain Kim, licensed clinical social worker in Durham, Janice McCabe, associate professor of sociology at Dartmouth, and Lydia Denworth, science journalist and a contributing editor at Scientific American. Today's show was produced by Exchange Fellow Jane Vaughn with help from Christina Phillips. This is The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.